Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am indeed Tom. Thank you for joining us today. When you have a moment, when you have a chance, do me a big favor. Check us out at consumerguide.com. Lots of fun stuff there. I won't go into it. Also, if you have a chance, you have the time, please subscribe to the podcast. That helps us out. And leave us a review wherever you subscribe, especially if you're on Apple. That's where it matters most. All right, with me in studio, Jill Simonello. Jill, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. You are a Consumer Guide contributor. You are a prolific freelancer, and you're a North American Car of the Year juror.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
So today's episode is spicy.
Okay.
Spicy. Do you know why it's spicy?
Because we're going to talk about some running.
No.
Because I did just run 3 miles.
No.
Yeah?
No, I drove 3 miles.
Okay.
And boy, my arm's tired.
Okay.
I don't know where to go with that joke.
Yeah, no.
No, I have a story that has nothing to do with anything automotive, but I have to share it.
Okay.
But I have to lead with something. Are you ready?
That it's spicy?
It's spicy.
Okay.
Do I smell good?
You're literally putting your arm in my face.
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just, do I smell good?
You smell like soap.
That's where this is going.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
You nailed it. I have a friend at the health club. Her name is Marnie.
Okay.
Marnie and I were talking, and Marnie is an employee of the health club, plus she works in fragrances. And we were talking about how the youngsters that come to the health club, 20-somethings, now douse themselves in different fragrances.
Yes.
And there's some new super expensive thing. It's like the Polo of the 20s. I don't know.
Okay.
But here's the deal. We started talking about fragrances, and because I can only end up talking about something without talking about a Western for, like, you know, after about 10 minutes.
Right.
I mentioned that Nick Barkley, one of the boys on the Big Valley, was into Bay Rum.
Okay.
2 days later, I run into Marty. She brought me a bar of Bay Rum soap. And that is from BadgerCreek.com. Badger Creek, people should check it out. But I'm wearing Badger Creek Bay Rum soap. I washed with that today. So I should smell good. And my wife described it as spicy.
I don't know that I would say it's spicy, but it's definitely soapy.
Yeah. It's mild, like, I think, compared to other Bay Rum. Are you familiar with Bay Rum?
I am not.
It's definitely like the predecessor, the great granddad of, like, modern men's cologne.
Okay.
And I think it was born in San Francisco from the Bay Area, you know, like Asian imports and stuff. But whatever.
Okay.
I like the way I smell.
I don't not like the way you smell. How's that? You don't smell bad.
I got free soap from BadgerCreek.com. That's
Got it.
Also, I don't think Marnie is affiliated with Badger Creek, so it's not even a pimp there.
Okay.
All right. I am driving the... Are we done with that topic?
I think we're done. I think we could go back to talking about the 3 miles I just ran.
No.
That would be a way better conversation.
No, we're good.
Okay.
Not spicy. The 2025 Lexus 500H F-Sport Performance All-Wheel Drive.
Okay.
It's really good.
Okay.
But like so many Lexus crossovers that have F-Sport in their name, not actually that sporty.
No, it's more of like a design package.
Yeah, there is sporty stuff in there. You get 21-inch wheels, and you get a specially tuned adaptive suspension. But dang, is that a refined vehicle. Like a benchmark for crossover refinement. It is quiet. It is refined. It rides well. The power delivery is good. Even though, and we've talked about this, I'm still mad that the old V6 is gone. This new hybrid powertrain is pretty slick.
Okay.
Have you driven this thing yet?
I think I have. It's been like a year or so, but yeah.
Yeah, awfully nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening to its sales. We talked a little bit about how Grand Highlander sales are stealing Highlander sales. I don't know if that's happening at Lexus, where the TX, which is more or less a long wheelbase three-row version of the RX.
Yeah. It's like the Grand Highlander.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
All right. So that's a nice car. Big news at Ram.
Yeah.
You want it?
I feel like, yeah, we need the death march here.
So just to clarify, Ram isn't dead.
No.
But a Ram product that we never got to see is.
Yes. The Ram Rev, the electric vehicle from Ram is dead. And they are going, or I guess, were they originally calling it the Rev? At any rate, the Ram Charger lives. And I think they are now calling that the Ram Rev.
Yeah, so it's all very confusing and a little bit sad.
It is, but you and I have had this conversation on the show before where I never, ever, ever thought that a full-size truck was a good place for an electric powertrain. Because it was just never going to be able to appeal to the truck guys because it couldn't do truck things.
I think the reason manufacturers thought it was... And you're not wrong.
I'm never wrong.
But, dear God. The reason I think manufacturers thought it was a good idea was volume. The Ram 1500, the Ford F-150, and the Chevy Silverado sell in massive quantities.
Yeah.
Huge numbers.
Yeah.
All three of them combined for almost 2 million units a year. So I think they figured the volume was there.
Yeah, it was not. And it was. I've done a couple of articles about this when I was working with Tim Esterdahl from Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. He's also written articles about why truck guys were never going to adopt an electric full-size truck. And I fully believe that mid-size electric trucks were where they should have started. And, I mean, maybe even compact electric trucks, because when you get into the compact and the midsize, you're looking at more of a lifestyle-y city truck that isn't dependent upon towing and doing heavy-duty truck things.
That's true, but I think an awful lot of 1,500 half-ton pickups, the big trucks, also end up being lifestyle vehicles.
Well, they do.
If you see one on the road here on Palatine Road, yeah, probably a lifestyle
vehicle.
They
do, but here's the thing. A guy who is a truck guy is going to buy a full-size truck for that one day in 20 years that maybe they are going to tow heavy shit.
That is actually the point we've made about Subaru and the 8 days a year in Chicago where you're really glad you have a Subaru because of the snow.
Or the
although you're always glad you have a Subaru.
Or the, what is it, the 350 days that they're going to put a kayak on top.
Because Subaru gives them $10 off their monthly payment every
They're
putting a cardboard or inflatable kayak on their roof.
There was a period of time, every time I saw a Subaru with a kayak or something on the roof rails, I had to take a picture and send it to Tom.
Crazy Subaru. But yeah, the F-150 isn't selling especially well, but it's not a stinker. It's, what are they moving, like 30,000 units a year, something like that, 35,000? Yeah. So they're moving some of those. And then Chevy, or General Motors, I should say, has backed off building the Silverado EV and the Sierra EV to the extent that they're not opening that new factory yet that was going to build those at Orion Township, I think.
Right.
So they're going to keep building those at their factory zero,
right,
where they build everything. And then Ram's just not going to bring one out.
Yeah. I guess we should talk a little bit about what the Ram Charger or the new Ram Rev is. And that is a range extended electric vehicle. So essentially it has an electric powertrain with a gasoline. I think they're using the Hurricane 6-cylinder.
No, it's the old Pentastar V6.
Okay, so the old Pentastar V6. I'm like, I knew it was a 6-cylinder.
Yeah.
So they're using the Pentastar V6 as a generator, essentially. It does not provide any motivation to the wheels. It simply charges the battery.
Right.
So electric powertrain, but takes gasoline.
Yeah, it's a plug-in hybrid. I forgot what the range was, 190 miles. It was a lot of range for a plug-in hybrid, not a lot for an EV.
Right.
And then I've always had these questions about how this was going to work in terms of towing for long periods of time.
I thought it was getting up to like 500 miles of
total. Yeah, there's
total
a bunch
range
of range there, but I've always wondered about power output when the battery was depleted and you were just trusting the V6 to provide generated power. And I still don't have all the answers there, but it passed some towing tests that I don't understand.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, with towing, the important number is going to be your torque. And so one of the things that electric powertrains do really well is they have a lot of instantaneous high, you know, good torque numbers. So, I don't think they've released any official specs. I don't think we have a lot of information here. We just know that it's going to be a range extended vehicle.
So that's the thing they've committed to, and they will be the only The F-150 is available with a hybrid,
yep,
no plug-in hybrid, and available with an electric powertrain. And the Chevy and the GMC are available electric and gasoline. But the Ram will be the first plug-in hybrid,
yep,
basically. But it's not... The difference between extended range electric vehicle and plug-in hybrid is subtle, but there is a difference.
Yeah.
Although CEOs don't care when they talk about them.
No, no. I mean, it's definitely semantics. I think the difference is when you have a plug-in hybrid, the gasoline engine can provide power directly to the wheels.
Yep.
But when you have a range extended vehicle, the gasoline engine never provides motivation to the wheels. It only charges the battery.
So the big question here is when now will we see what they're now calling the REV, which used to be the Ramcharger, and what will that cost?
Yeah.
Because the opportunity for that to be too expensive is real.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a big battery to make that work. So that's like an added cost. Plus all the equipment involved in charging. Speaking of charging.
Charging, yes.
I got a personal email today from the good folks at Electrify America. And I say good folks because I'm surprised they're being nice to me at this point. Having maybe said some bad things about them over the years, but they're putting in a new station right by here.
Okay.
And it's going to be a 350.
Okay.
So a super fast, or they call it ultra fast.
Okay.
350 kilowatt station's going in around here, which is nice because my never working EVgo station across the street from my house apparently has been abandoned.
Yeah.
So thank you folks at EVgo.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of charging, I actually just posted on all of my social media outlets today a video where I was charging just kind of showing how the charging situation was going with the Mini Countryman EV at an Electrify America station. So
in the city?
In the city. It was at in the back of a Bank of America parking lot. Nothing ticks me off more than when they do stupid crap like that and they put a charging station in like a desert so you can't pee or get food.
Oh, see, this is interesting. The Bank of America thing must be a tie-up with Electrify America because in Lake Zurich, not so far from here, there's a 150 kilowatt station in a Bank of America parking lot. But this one is convenient to things, including, I think, a Trader Joe's. So...
I mean, you
can get up and pee if you needed to.
You could walk a half a mile from this Bank of America parking lot and go pee maybe in a coffee shop somewhere down the road. But I'm just like, I get very irked when you have a charging station that doesn't have a facility.
At least it's relatively quick. All the EA stations now are 150s or 350s. So much faster.
Yeah, yeah.
Than a lot of the 50s out there.
The thing about the Mini EV is I want to say it only takes up to 130 kilowatt hours.
Okay.
And so even though I had like a 350 kilowatt hour charging station, it was never going to charge like in 15 minutes. It took me about a half an hour to go from 40% to 85%.
I learned something today, by the way, in my exchange with the good folks at Electrify America, and that most of these stations are eight unit installations.
Okay.
And there's four islands of two. And this is how this works. If someone is parked there, don't use the same island.
Yep.
Each island is set up for 350. Yep. If you pull up, both of you are just going to get 150.
Yep.
So not only are you doing something dumb, you are totally screwing.
Yeah. And I actually mentioned that in my video today because like the charging station was full. And so I had to share a charging block with another electric vehicle, which cuts your power in half.
All right. Moving on.
You're done with electric charging.
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I'm still feeling a little queasy about being nice to the folks at Electrify America. But I've had good luck with them lately.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed for those guys.
Fingers crossed. And they actually put a nice comment on my Instagram post. So.
Yeah, they reached out to me simply because I was excited about the installation of Palatine, which I mentioned on X.
Okay.
So they reached out to me. So I don't even know. They know
their social media team is working overtime.
Yeah, I don't know if they know that I'm angry, Tom. But I have had two.
But you're spicy, Tom, because you smell spicy today.
I've had two very good charging experiences there. Quick, fast. Although I have to get an account there because I'm paying 63 cents a kilowatt hour, which is highway robbery. So I need to set up an account.
I mean, I have an account and it's still 56 cents.
That's too much.
It's still a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about Magna International and its Steyr plant in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
We know this plant for a bunch of reasons, but it currently builds the BMW Z4 and the Toyota Supra.
Mm-hmm.
And it was building the Fisker Karma, or Fisker Ocean.
Yeah.
Which means they're not building the Fisker Ocean anymore.
No, they are not.
But this is a huge and very flexible manufacturing facility. They are now This is tariff-related, but not American tariff-related. They are going to begin building electric vehicles for GAC, China's GAC and XPeng. X-P-E-N-G. Okay. People pronounce it XPeng. I don't know what the correct pronunciation is. But they're going to begin building vehicles there in Austria so they can import them without tariff into the EU.
Okay.
So, interesting thing. Big Magna has got more work to do. And someone's trying to dodge some tariffs there. Yeah. And Chinese are big into exports. So, there you go.
Okay.
Oh, you know what else they build? The G-Class. The big
The
Mercedes paramilitary. The Geländewagen.
Yeah, that.
Or
the Gewissewa.
Yeah. How do you spell that?
I don't know. I don't know how you spell any of it.
Can you spell Sierra?
Yeah, it starts with a C.
It does indeed. Millions. There were millions of those.
Yes.
If you went to an airport and drove past a rental lot, it was just a sea of Sierras.
Okay.
All right. Anyway.
And by the way, that's a reference to last week's episode.
Yes, it is.
If you don't understand, you should go listen.
Yeah. Where you passed the spelling bee.
I did.
Yeah.
Barely.
All right. You just drove. Very important car.
Still kind of driving. I turned it in tomorrow.
Oh, okay. And it is a car.
It is a car.
You just drove the 2025 Civic Hybrid?
Yes.
Do tell. I have not driven this yet, and I've heard nothing but good.
You know, yes-ish. In some ways, I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. IMHO. So I just drove it to Indianapolis and back. So that's my
200 miles.
200 mile there and then 200 mile back road trip. And I had my husband and my sister in the car. And about an hour and a half in, I looked at them and I said, okay, how y'all feeling? Like, what's the comfort like? What are you feeling like? And my husband was snoring. So I'm like, okay, I imagine he's probably feeling
reasonably comfortable.
Reasonably comfortable because he's snoring. But my sister, she's like, you know, the seats are a little firm. And I can echo that from the driver's seat. The seats are definitely a little bit firm. Now, they're not as bad as some recent Honda seats that I've sat in, like the Honda HR-V, I thought those were miserable seats and very uncomfortable for a 3-hour drive.
The HR-V. The tiny crossover.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the seat's not super comfortable. I wonder if they would break down over time. So that's thing number one. Thing number two.
When you say break down.
Like get a little bit, not the car breaking down, the seat foam down.
I'm just picturing you on the highway and the seat bag just falls all the way back.
That would be bad.
That would be uncomfortable.
Well, and I mean, I've got good core strength, but that would be tough. Thing number two is going to be the highway fuel economy. You should be getting, I want to say it was 47 miles per gallon on the highway.
The EPA numbers for the hybrid are thundering. 48 or 49 mpg, depending on the trim level. So I suppose that's wheel size.
On the highway or combined?
That's combined.
Okay, yeah. So on the highway, I think it's 47. And I got nowhere near that.
Okay.
And
how fast were you going?
I mean, I was going in Indianapolis on 465. The speed limit is 55. So I was going 55-60. But that's 20 minutes of my drive. On 69 or 65 heading north between Chicago and Indianapolis, that's the longest stretch of the drive. That's a 70-mile-per-hour speed limit. And so I was probably going 75, going with the flow of traffic, and I was getting like maybe 38 miles per gallon.
That's still really good mileage.
It's good, but it's not close to the EPA estimates.
It's not the EPA numbers, but I'm not a strict adherent to comparing real-world mileage to the EPA miles, because EPA miles...
I'm typically not, but I will say the last two vehicles I've driven, so Volkswagen Tiguan included, which we talked about, I think, last week, I've gotten at EPA estimates or above doing the same drive. So I am not as willing to cut slack because I've now had like two vehicles prior to this that hit the numbers or went above going 70 to 75 miles an hour.
Yeah. I think real world numbers need to be compared to real world numbers. I don't know about the EPA numbers, but yeah, that is disappointing.
Yeah.
But almost 40, just stepping back, almost 40 mpg in a roomy, quick, powerful car. Seems good to me.
Yeah, and I will say the steering is really stiff. Like you would think Honda Civic is kind of an economy vehicle and would be a little bit sloppy. But I feel like they, especially because I was in the top tier sport touring and, you know, Honda has started calling all of their hybrids like sport. And
yeah, they have completely unique model names for the hybrids.
Right. And so this was the top sport touring trim. And I just felt like it was certainly fun to drive. It had good driving dynamics. The steering wheel, like, it didn't feel numb or loose. And so I thought that it felt actually a little bit sporty. But, you know, I mean, as sporty as it can be when you're just stuck in a lane on a highway.
Interesting thing. We've talked a lot about this. About how America seems to be hybrid crazy. Mm-hmm. But increasingly, manufacturers are forcing people into hybrids.
Yeah.
The Civic lineup now only includes 3 non-hybrids.
Yeah.
And then 4 hybrid models, mm-hmm. hatchback and sedan. Mm-hmm. And then you still have the SI and the R.
Yeah.
And the only manual left is in the SI or the R.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's LX sedan, and sport hatchback. Those are your non-hybrids. 150 horsepower regular. 2-liter engine, and then you have sport hybrid hatchback, or sport hybrid sedan, sport hybrid hatchback, sport touring hybrid sedan, and sport touring hybrid hatchback.
Yeah, and I was in the sport touring hybrid hatchback.
Those are also much more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, but
because those are being treated as premium trim levels.
$33,000, you know, is the base price of the sport touring hatchback.
Which, it's a lot of car for the money, and you're getting a hybrid, and you're getting great fuel economy.
And this had leather seats. It had the Google built-in. It had wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Bose premium audio sound system, which I'm a podcast listener, so I don't listen to the music. But
funny thing about the Bose thing is that the folks at Honda never wanted to go with a branded audio system in any Honda, but they found out that the public wanted it.
Yeah.
So at top trim levels at Honda, you now get Bose systems.
Yeah.
And they sound pretty good.
Yeah. And here's the interesting thing that is missing now. XM radio.
Oh.
Honda has started removing XM radio, and I believe Acura has started doing it as well, from their vehicles because, like, it's a subscription-based thing.
Yep.
You're going to have to pay for it one way or the other. So what they want you to do is to subscribe to Sirius XM Radio by yourself on your phone via an app. And then when you connect to CarPlay, then you can connect to XM Radio through your phone.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer and a bit of a drag, but it is handy if you get in and out of more than one car.
Mm-hmm.
You're only paying for one subscription.
Yep.
Although the subscription then is attached to the person, not the vehicle.
Yep.
So if you have a family of 5 people, that's a little complicated. Do you need 5 subscriptions?
Yeah, I don't know how that works, if there's like a family subscription, so everybody would download that onto their phone. But I do know a single subscription to XM Radio, if you put it on your phone, is less than what the subscription would have been if you had it in the car, and you get more stations.
All right. What are the only the other hybrid compact cars, the Elantra and the K4? The Hyundai Elantra and the Kia K4.
Yeah, I think you are correct.
Yeah, and then the other cars in that class to think about are the Corolla. The Mazda 3 is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to get anywhere near this mileage.
Not a hybrid.
Big honking 4-cylinder engine.
Well, Corolla has a hybrid.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot that. Yes.
But the Mazda 3 doesn't have a hybrid. Yeah, I mean, the compact sedan is starting to go away. And if you wanted something a little bit bigger, I mean, obviously you could go to Toyota Camry. You could go to
Sonata. I find
Sonata.
The current crop of compact sedans big enough. Like, they're roomier.
Yeah.
Like the Sentra.
Yeah.
Geez.
Yeah.
It feels like an Altima. It's big.
And my sister sitting in the back seat, I mean, she's 5'3". Let's be clear. She's not a tall person. But sitting in the back seat, she said she had plenty of leg room and felt, you know, in terms of head space and just passing. She was working on her computer, so she felt pretty comfortable back there.
So the Honda Civic, one of the last truly hot-selling small sedans. Your final take is?
I really like it, but as I said, it's a bit of a mixed bag. If you are looking for really cushy seats or spot-on EPA fuel economy, you might not hit it. But overall, I think it's an attractive car, and it has some really good sporty dynamics.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, Honda Civic. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Don Sikora, editor-in-chief of Collectible Automobile Magazine. It's been a while. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom. She is Jill. Jill, how's it going?
This is like the third time you've asked me that.
I think second.
I don't know. You asked me twice, like right close to each other in the first segment. So I'm just going to say, hey, I feel great because you know what? I ran 3 miles before this.
This is our spicy episode, as
it
we noted earlier. So you haven't changed, like you're still fine.
I am still fine.
All right. Help me out here.
You would like to talk about social media.
Not really, but just a little bit. I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky.
Okay.
Fine collection of Car Spotter stuff this Saturday.
Yes.
Which I got up on Saturday.
Okay.
Which I don't usually do anymore.
I shared a Car Spotter this weekend.
Wait, what was it?
It was a Chevy SSR. It was a very pretty blue.
Oh, I didn't see that.
With the top down, parked in a lot. I was visiting my mom and saw it in Indianapolis area. It was gorgeous.
I once called that the ultimate parade float tow vehicle. Not a lot of use for that thing.
No, but you know what? It was a very interesting vehicle. I remember I had just started writing about cars when that came out, and I was fascinated by it. And I talked to one of the engineers who was so geeking out about how the top goes down and folds vertically between the cabin and the bed.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it's just kind of cool.
You can make something do something cool that is also meaningless.
Both things can be true.
You know who has thoughts on the SSR? Don Sikora.
Okay.
All right. On the phone with us is Don Sikora. He is the editor-in-chief of Collectible Automobile Magazine. Don, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I have a test for you, Don.
Okay.
Can you name all 7 vehicles that were on the GMT, I think it was called the 380 or 360 architecture, with the SSR?
The Chevy Trailblazer.
Uh-huh.
GMC Envoy.
Uh-huh.
Bravada.
You're going to get
Buick, the Buick. My sister had one.
I'll give it to you because you know the Buick. Rainier. Yeah.
The Saab.
Yeah, I forgot about the Saab, yes.
And there was an Isuzu.
Uh-huh. Was that a Sender?
I think it was a Sender.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's it because we have SSR. That's 7.
Was it the Saabaroo or was it the 9...
97X.
Yeah, which wasn't terrible, but I have a long story about that event. Oh, no, I told it on air.
You did.
Because our friend Tom Beeman, who was at that event working for Saab,
yes,
shared that story. Don, how are you and how are things at Collectible Automobile Magazine?
I'm doing pretty good. We're very busy. Right now we're working on the February issue.
Wow.
So December issues at the printer should be out in a couple, maybe 2-3 weeks. And, just keeping very busy.
So for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about Collectible Automobile. I checked. The magazine goes back to 1984. So you guys are celebrating your 41st year.
Yeah, 41 years. We're almost to volume 42. The December issue was our 250th issue.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's nice.
And, like the name implies, we focus on collectible cars and also on usually light-duty trucks. There's usually 4 to 5 feature articles and then some photo features. And we do some columns, like we do Cheap Wheels and Future Collectible, where we pick cars or trucks that we think are interesting and talk about them a little. And then we cover like the collectible literature, like dealer brochures and stuff, and model cars. And we have a value guide, and then we have a retired designer, Dick Nesbitt, and he talks a little bit about the design of the cars in that issue.
That's really cool. Dick is awesome, by the way. He is relatively prolific on Facebook. For people who don't know Dick, he did a lot of... he was with Ford for most of his career, correct?
Yeah, mostly Ford, and then he was with... I think he was with International for a little while, and then he was with one of the big, like, semi-truck companies, like...
He recently shared
Marmon.
Oh, okay. He recently shared pictures on Facebook of this very interesting minivan that wasn't a minivan that Ford was working on
okay.
way before way before Chrysler hit the minivan idea. And it kind of looked like a full-size van with a very rakish profile. I can't remember what it was called. Good-looking vehicle.
The Carousel.
The Carousel, that's it. What a great-looking vehicle. But that was Dick's work, and it definitely prefaced what we would come to think of as a family hauler.
Does he keep his profile public?
Yes.
So what is Dick's full name?
Nesbitt.
Okay, so if people wanted to follow him, they could.
Yep, they should.
Okay, Dick Nesbitt.
Yeah. So Don, we have in front of us right here, Open.
Open.
Open is open the October page. 2025 episode. Tell us about issue. Tell us about what's going on this month.
So this month, this is currently on newsstand. We have feature articles. We have the clear top Fords and Mercurys of 1954 to 56.
That is crazy. Tell us about the clear tops.
So they decided to put basically a very early version of the sunroof in certain Tudor hardtops, but it was a fixed plexiglass panel that was, like, I believe it was heat form or vacuum form to the shape of the roof.
Yeah, we're looking at the article now.
Green, and then they had, I think some of them had zip-in sunshades and other ones had snap-in sunshade.
Interesting.
So it was they did it from 54 to 56 at Ford, and Mercury did it in 54 and 55. They're pretty interesting cars, but they at least have a reputation as getting kind of warm inside.
Like being in a greenhouse?
I don't know how true that is. Yeah, kind of. Because it's a green-tinted plexiglass top.
Yeah, they're cool looking.
Basically is, yeah, they are. But it basically covers the entire front seat of the car.
Cool. What else is in this issue? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. The 1971 to 74 Dodge Coronet.
Uh-huh.
That's when Dodge split. The two doors were all Chargers, and the four doors and the wagons were Coronets. It was like their mid-size car. And then we did 1947 to 55 GMC light-duty trucks. And then the feature that was my favorite for the issue, at least, is the 1969 Chevy Camaro.
Which was written by our dear friend Sam Fiorani.
Yeah, Sam wrote that.
And Sam is famous for writing stuff about kind of lame cars, so this one's...
Hi, Sam. I know you're listening.
He is. He just texted me. I haven't had a chance to look at it. But it's good to see Sam get to write about an exciting car, too.
Yeah, I think he's a little disappointed. You know, he'd rather write about a Yugo or something. But,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the 69 Camaro and why that was a big deal.
So it's a pretty interesting car because it's very unusual. It's a facelift of the 67 to 68 Camaro, but it basically ends up being a one-year-only design, which is pretty unusual.
Yeah.
In cars, especially by that time. It wasn't so unusual in the 50s. And it was, much like the Mustang, it was kind of anything you wanted it to be. It had a very extensive option list. It had a lot of different engines, from mild-mannered straight sixes all the way up to the COPO cars with 427, SS396s, V28, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But of course, the main market for them was more the much milder cars. And so we talked about the design because it steps pretty far away from the 67 to 68 car. It's like everything from the belt line down, except for maybe the hood and the deck lid, was new.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Exterior. The interior was changed somewhat. And they still offered, you know, it had two different front ends, a standard or a rally sport. Just came as a Tudor hardtop or a convertible. And it had a lot of unusual options. Like, it had a fold-down rear seat.
Oh, that's handy.
It wasn't, no pass-through to the trunk, but the seat folded down.
Oh, not as handy as I thought.
No. So it was just, you know, kind of unusual, kind of like a 911, I guess. It had some unusual options. You could get headlight washers that shot windshield washer fluid onto the headlight.
That's pretty cool.
And then the kind of a legendary option that almost nobody bought was you could get this contraption that sprayed from aerosol cans mounted in the trunk traction enhancing fluid that was supposed to help in the winter. It would spray this stuff that you could buy at the parts department through the inner wheel well and onto the tread of the tire.
I actually have an article about that stuff, about that system, on consumerguide.com. It's crazy. And there's no, like, 3 years after they gave up on that, no one was able to find a can of that stuff. Wasn't it just sort of tacky tar stuff?
I'm not 100% sure. They called it liquid tire chain. And we actually had, like, a very good document with, like, how many Camaros were fit with each option, and there was only 188 Camaros had that option, and we do have a picture of it in the article.
Yeah, we were literally just pointing at it.
Yeah, it's a great picture. There's probably one can of that stuff left. It's on eBay right now for $38,000.
Yeah.
that's probably one of those things where rare doesn't necessarily mean valuable. Yeah.
So 69, some of these Camaros have concealed headlights. What trim levels were those?
That's the Rally Sport.
Okay, that's good looking.
The Rally Sport had it had a totally different grill with hidden headlights. And the interesting part, the doors that concealed the headlights had, each door had three little clear windows in it. Which was fairly unusual touch.
Yeah, that's
And then the regular grill was very heavily bead, kind of sunken into the front of the body with just two exposed round headlights.
Now, you had mentioned that the bulk of the sales were in fairly low performance trim levels. Was this sort of the birth of what we referred to for a while as the secretary's car?
I think a lot of pony cars were kind of that. I think that was fairly common. The hot ones got all the attention, Boss 302 Mustangs and Hemi Cudas and all that kind of stuff too, but that stuff was very low volume for the most part. They sold much more where it was just, kind of a nice sporty little coupe. Somebody that didn't want a Nova or didn't want a
Better looking.
Or a Maverick or whatever.
I mean, this could get you basically a base Nova experience in better looking sheet metal, so why not?
Yeah, and it was related to these cars were related to the Nova that came out in 68.
Yeah, my pop owned a 70 Nova, 307. That car had three options on it, 307 automatic AM radio, and the thigh burner black vinyl interior.
Yeah, it sounds like a car my dad would have bought.
So explain this if you can. Maybe you have a handle on why this is. So for 69, kind of a unique year for the car. It was updated for 69, and then it was updated for 70, dramatically different looking, and I love the 70 so much. But then General Motors did nothing. They basically redesigned the car for 69, and they did nothing between 1970 and 1981.
What? Yeah, well, they did. It got several facelifts, but yeah, the car stayed pretty steady, and the market really changed in the 70s, and personal luxury coupes, that was the SUV of the 70s.
Right,
and
right.
They sold, hundreds of thousands of Monte Carlos, and especially Oldsmobile Cutlasses, and Chrysler Cordobas and all that stuff, and the pony cars kind of faded into the background. The Challenger and the Cuda and the Javelin go away after 74. The Mercury Cougar evolves into a personal luxury car for 74. It gets bigger, And Camaro and Firebird, and the Mustang, of course, gets downsized to the Pinto-based Mustang, too. But the Camaro and Firebird held on. And I don't know the details, but there were talk where it was very close to where they were going to get discontinued somewhere in that 1974-5-6 range.
Which would have been crazy.
But the cars survived. Yeah.
Because they sold so many Mustang 2s. I mean, enthusiasts hate them. We look back at them and kind of cringe a little bit, but they were insanely popular, and then they did what they were supposed to do. I mean, they were small, reasonably practical, reasonably affordable, and by the standards of the day, good-looking.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and reasonably fun. And but the Camaro and the Firebird, then, they kind of caught a second wind in the late 70s, especially with the Firebird, with the you know, the Smokey and the Bandit Trans Ams and all that stuff. And they had some very good years at the end of the 70s.
My first fantasy girlfriend was a 1979 Trans Am, so I completely understand.
Fantasy girlfriend was a car.
Yeah.
That says a lot about you.
Yeah, no, it's a problem. I'm still in therapy. But the 79 Trans Am, holy cow.
Okay.
Black with gold. Was it the WS6 package? Got your rear disc brakes? Holy cow.
Yeah.
What a cool
and
car.
The wider wheels. And, yeah, those were, for the day, those were great cars.
If people want to read this article or just subscribe to Collectible Automobile, how do people do that, Don?
So they can check out our website at collectibleautomobile.com. You can subscribe there. Or in the U.S., you can call 1-800-777-5582.
Sounds good. This is a fantastic magazine. Also, the holidays are coming up. This is a perfect gift, right? And people can do that, right? They can subscribe as a gift?
Yeah, you can do a gift subscription.
Yeah, you want to do that. Your dad would love it. Your grandpa, and maybe your grandma. Was grandma into cars?
Mm-hmm.
Mine wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandpa had a Mustang, just want to say.
Well, you know.
Oh. All right. Don, thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, yeah, you're welcome.
All right, that was Don Sikora, editor-in-chief of Collectible Automobile Magazine, the finest old car magazine you can buy on newsstands today. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. Jill is fine.
I am, you know what? I'm better than fine, because you know what I did before the podcast?
I don't know. I ran three miles.
Yeah.
Which isn't really spicy.
I think it's kind of spicy. Not, I think I had a really good clip today. I've been coming back from an injury.
Yeah.
And today's run felt good.
I will feign interest later.
I know.
Speaking of feigning interest, you're active in social media.
I am active in social media. You can find me in TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all the things, X, Twitter. I am on Facebook, typically at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag CarDuJour. So if you're looking for me someplace and you don't see me and you don't know how to spell Simonello, because it's a lot of I's and a lot of L's, just look for the hashtag CarDuJour.
You should do CarDuJong. Doesn't that mean with garlic?
I have no idea.
Oh, all right.
CarDuJour is the car that I'm driving today.
Because there's shrimp DuJong.
No garlic here.
Okay.
It's not that spicy.
All right. I had sort of an epiphany thinking about this week's quiz.
Okay.
And I've been thinking it hasn't been as educational as it could be.
Okay.
So I thought we should do something that maybe looks back a little bit in history, it's educational, and still fun, I think.
Okay.
So I'm going to be a little bit more serious about stuff this week, if that's okay.
You and serious are not two words that go together. Just like you and spicy actually doesn't go very well together. I'm just going to put that out there. Like me and Spicy probably goes a little bit better than Tom and Spicy.
You might be giving yourself a little too much credit there, young lady.
I don't know. I'm thinking of creating a column called Spicy Jill.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Spicy Jill.
Spicy.
All right. Today's topic is, educational.
Okay.
Partridge or president? I'm going to give you someone's name, and you have to tell me if they were a member of the Partridge Family cast.
Okay.
Or a past CEO of Ford.
Okay.
It's educational.
Okay. It is educational, and I will not get this because I don't know anyone in the Partridge family.
The Partridge family ran between 1970 and 1974.
Okay.
And it was terrible.
Okay, before my time, glad I missed it.
I remember watching TV as a kid and like, crap, is this all that's on? I hate this show. But I would still watch it because...
I know nothing about
I didn't want to do anything healthy like go outside and be in sunshine.
Okay.
All right, five questions plus the bonus question. You need to get three for a win.
Okay.
The first person I'm going to throw out there is David Madden. David Madden. Was David Madden a member of the Partridge Family cast? Or was he a past CEO or president of the Ford Motor Company?
It does not ring a bell either way. The only thing I'm thinking of, isn't there a video game that's like Madden, like a sports something?
Well, yes, but that's got nothing to do.
I know it has nothing to do with this, but I'm like, I got nothing.
I don't know if they still do that. Madden NFL used to be super popular.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it was called Madden NFL.
Okay.
Every year it updated.
Not a gamer here.
We are a little tight on time.
Oh, we've got 10 minutes. We are not tight on time. We've got plenty of time.
But, okay.
I'm just saying. We got time. I'm going to even grab my donut, which is a cinnamon powdered donut.
You're assuming that one's yours.
I am. It is mine.
All right.
I've claimed it. I've touched it. I've sneezed on it. Achoo.
My buddy Dave and his brother used to go play basketball in the summer, and they would each bring a bottle of knee-high. It might have been Fanta. Orange soda with them.
Okay.
And they'd get there, and my buddy Dave's brother would go, "This one's mine. I spit in it."
Yep.
And yes, that was his then.
That's his. Yeah. That so
is,
I sneezed on
that
it.
That is a solid claim.
That is mine.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Ford president.
No, Donald Madden played. David Madden played Reuben Kincaid, the band's manager.
Got it.
All right.
Yeah. Nothing.
Donald Peterson.
I'm going to say Ford president.
He was, yeah. He was CEO between 1985 and 1990 and would oversee the development of, though not the launch of, the Explorer.
Okay.
So, kind of a big deal there. You have 1 point. You're on the board.
I have a point. You didn't use your favorite phrase when you could have, though.
Oh, yeah. You've got no points.
Yeah, but now I have a point. Now you have points. Use
yeah.
It.
A lot of the sting goes out of that then. Brian Forster.
I'm going to say Partridge Family.
Yes, he played Chris Partridge, which I believe was the youngest Partridge.
So, wait a minute. The Partridge Family wasn't actually a real family. It was actually a fictional TV show?
Yes.
I don't know why I thought it was real.
Probably because they toured as a band.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That ugly bus that looked like a Mondrian.
Yeah, that's how much I don't know about the Partridge Family.
All right. Well, you've got 2 points, so you're in good way now.
Okay.
Alan Mulally.
Oh, that one I actually know.
Uh-huh.
Because I have a badge signed by him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, he's Ford president.
Yeah, between 2006 and 2014. Is he the dude that came from Boeing? I think he is.
I don't remember that.
He may have come from Boeing.
But I've met him. He was a friendly guy.
Yeah, you've won already.
Yeah.
He was the founder, the instigator of the Ford One strategy, which was a plan to integrate all the global platforms of Ford so that they wouldn't be building different cars in every country that were entirely different.
Got it.
And I think he got some of that done. Finally, Alex Trotman.
This is not a name I know. But I've already won, so it doesn't matter. I can guess. I'll say Partridge Family.
Nope, Alex was Ford, 1993-1999. He actually launched the predecessor to the Ford One strategy, which was the Ford 2000 initiative. Mm. Okay, he called it the Ford 2000 initiative, and he quit in 99. What was a slacker? But he was also working to achieve some sort of global
He was afraid of Y2K, harmony. Which is why he stopped before the year 2000.
That's right. So you got three total. You've won. It's time for the bonus question. Do you want to know what it's about?
Always.
The topic is booted from Greece.
Okay.
Talking about Wendy's here.
Okay.
We talk a lot about fast food restaurants.
We do.
Wendy's has had the hardest time breaking into Europe.
Okay.
As it turns out. They had a few stores in Greece. They were there for 3 years, and everyone hated them. So Wendy's left Greece.
Did they not like redheads there? Is that the problem?
But what I have here, well, guess how many Wendy's there are in the whole world?
Oh, we know. I'm horrible at this. 14,000.
Not bad. 7,300.
Okay.
I would have thought that number was... Actually, I would have guessed higher, too. In the U.S.?
2,000.
6,000.
Okay.
And in the U.K.?
100.
14.
Okay.
So we're just talking about Wendy's phenomenal global success here.
Yes.
I need you to tell me which of the following is not on the U.K. menu at breakfast menu at Wendy's.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The breakfast Baconator with Heinz ketchup, the breakfast Baconator with HP brown sauce, the egg double stack, the egg triple stack. One of those not on the menu. Breakfast menu at Wendy's in the UK.
So I'm going to say brown sauce seems very British.
Yes.
So I'm going to say that one is true.
Okay.
Why would they have a double stack and a triple stack?
It's a good question. Think about brown sauce real quick. We have a bottle at home and to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it's like, wow, brown sauce is great. And then after a couple of days, you're like, I need ketchup again. Very, very much an acquired taste.
Well, and the Brits do a lot of like mayonnaise. They dip their french fries in mayonnaise instead of ketchup.
That's a Euro thing.
But I always thought that was very weird.
I felt bad when I was in Belgium in high school, and we were someplace, and we had French fries, and they served us mayonnaise, and everyone was being grossed out by it. And I'm like, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
Lest anybody think that I'm making fun of the Brits, I did live in England for a year.
Well, I don't think anyone thought you were making fun
of
the Brits.
I don't know. Just, you know, like, because we apparently made fun of the Swedes.
The Swedes.
But
anyone knows, I only make fun of the French.
Okay.
All right.
But no, I still have friends in England. Okay. So read through, except for the second one with the brown sauce, which I'm pretty sure is going to be real. Give me the first one, the third one, and the fourth one.
The breakfast Baconator with Heinz ketchup.
Okay.
Egg double stack, egg triple stack.
Why Heinz?
Good question.
I think it's going to be the first one.
That's the fake?
Yeah.
It is not.
Ugh.
Strangely, on the menu, the first two things on the breakfast menu are the breakfast Baconator with Heinz ketchup and the breakfast Baconator with HP brown sauce. What's weird about that to me is that they're calling out a condiment that would not be on them in the U.S. You would apply them yourself.
Yes.
So very interesting that they serve them that way.
And use the brand names.
Right.
Yeah.
It's Heinz ketchup. But brown sauce there pretty much universally is HP sauce, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think HP and brown sauce are kind of used interchangeably.
Yeah.
Like, we never say cola here.
No.
The egg triple stack is the fake.
Huh.
All right, you won. I'm going to sign this for you. You got three correct. A passable showing.
Mm-hmm.
A passable showing there. I got off the phone not too long before we got here. Did I talk about this at all?
Mm-mm.
The Audi A5.
Okay.
So I had the test car, and I got the test car in a bit of turmoil about what is actually happening with the Audi lineup.
Okay.
And we talked a little bit about this. But there are A5s now that are redesigned for 2025 and A5s that are not.
And then no A4.
And no A4. The A4 was discontinued. I just found this out. The A4 was discontinued late last year. It was a 2025 model at the end, but they're gone.
Okay.
So what's happening here that's so interesting, the A5 and the S5, which is the same vehicle but with more engine stuffed under the hood. I drove the S5. Fantastic car. Really nice. But just to be clear about this, the A4 goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is partly due to tariffs.
Okay.
They need something slightly higher margin in that spot now. So they're moving up to the racier A5, which was this fastback version, basically, of that same architecture, mm-hmm. but much better looking car. Hatchback, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So for 2025 and moving forward, the A5 and S5 are called hatchback.
Okay.
We lose the sportback designation, which was the old four-door designation. And then if it was just A5 or S5, it was the coupe.
Okay.
Two-door. Very confusing.
That is confusing, yes.
But the good news here is, though, you're going to be paying more for a compact four-door Audi moving forward.
That's the good news?
No, the good news is that it's an extremely nice car.
Okay. I was like, the good news is that you're paying more?
No, that's the bad news.
Okay.
But the 3-liter twin turbocharged engine, so slick, so sweet. 8-speed automatic transmission, works really well. And the interior, interestingly, not as flamboyant as all. We talked a little bit about this because you had mentioned you thought Audi interiors were kind of dull.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the case for a long time. They were over the top with wood and aluminum, and they were winning design awards and stuff. But ultimately, I think Genesis now wins the interior.
I would concur
conversation. With that. Yeah. Although I haven't been in very many Mercedes lately, I'm getting into one soon.
Okay.
So, and that's those are still.
Mercedes to me is like a big computer screen.
That's where they're going.
Yeah.
They showed,
And lots of ambient lighting.
Yeah. And part of that is that they have to do something, right? We've talked about how as regular cars get nicer and more luxurious, luxury makers are struggling to find things to separate their cars from the less interesting vehicles, the less luxury-oriented vehicles. So, strange situation.
Yeah.
All right. Guess what we did?
We had a really great conversation today.
Yeah. Thank you to Don Sikora of Collectible Automobile. We tried to get him in studio. We lured him with donuts.
And he said no.
But he said no. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.